Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Neuland Laboratories Limited Q4 and FY 2023 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in a listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ravi Udeshi from Ernst & Young. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Vikram. Good evening, friends. We welcome you to the Q4 and FY 2023 earnings conference call of Neuland Laboratories Limited. To take us through the results and to answer your questions, we have with us today the top management from Neuland Laboratories, represented by Mr. Sucheth Davuluri, Vice Chairman and CEO, Mr. Saharsh Davuluri, Vice Chairman and Managing Director, Mr. Abhijit Majumdar, CFO, and Mr. Sajeev Emmanuel-Medikonda, Head Corporate Planning and Strategy. We will start the call with a brief overview of the financials by Mr. Abhijit Majumdar, and then Saharsh will give you a broad highlights of the business trends and what he is observing in the market. Post this, we will open up the call for the Q&A session. As usual, the standard safe harbor clause applies as we start the call. With that said, I now hand over the floor to Abhijit. Over to you, Abhijit.
Thank you very much, Ravi, and a very good evening, and a warm welcome to you all for joining our Q4 and FY 2023 earnings call. I'll briefly talk about the financials now. The total income for this quarter was the highest ever at rupees 450.1 crores against rupees 256.5 crores in Q4 of FY 2023, an increase of 61%. This was largely driven by growth in the specialty CMS segment. Our EBITDA for the quarter stood at rupees 127.8 crores with our highest EBITDA margin of 30.8%, an increase of 15.5% over Q4 FY 2023. The increase in EBITDA margin has been due to a better business mix combined with an operating leverage as well as some easing in input prices. Compared to Q3 FY 2023, our revenues increased by 53.7% and our EBITDA margin increased by 10.47% or 1,047 basis points. I would like to state that the overall operating environment still continues to be unpredictable. However, we have seen some favorable movement in the past two quarters. Also, our focus on execution excellence and cost has enabled us to mitigate the said unpredictability. I would request you to measure, as we have consistently said in our previous earnings call, to measure our performance over a one-year time horizon as our EBITDA margins will fluctuate on a quarter-on-quarter basis based on business mix, which is dependent on order flow and project execution. Now coming to specifics, our gross margin was 54.1% in Q4 2023 compared to 47.9% in quarter four 2022 and 55.2% in quarter three FY 2023. The profit after tax was at 84.5 crores as compared to 21.8 crores last year. This quarter's EPS is at rupees 65.9 per share. On a full year basis, our gross margin was 54.1. Our total income was 1,200.9 crores, an increase of 26% over the prior period. The EBITDA increased by 94.8% to 281.1 crores as against 144.3 crores in FY 2022. The EBITDA margin has come in at 23.4% compared to 15.1% for FY 2022, an increase of 8.3% due to better mix and operating leverage. We generated a free cash flow for the year of rupees 172.4 crores, and our net debt position stands reduced to 62.9 crores. We continue to invest in upgrading our facilities and have invested 66.1 crore in CapEx during this period. With that, I would like to hand over the call to Saharsh for his remarks, and once again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Abhijit. Hi, good evening, everyone. Given that the financial year is complete, I would like to share some thoughts on the year gone by first, and then talk a little bit more specifically on Q4. Newland has displayed significant growth in FY23. Given that FY22 was a flat year for us, we are pleased to see that the company has resumed its upward trajectory. I would like to state that this year is a fairly good illustration of the course we have set for ourselves as a company. You may recall from the last few years' management commentary that Newland has always been positioned as a complex API player, striving for growth in both the generic API space and the CDMO space. We have highlighted in the past how the CMS business has a strong pipeline of NCEs that will fuel business growth as these molecules achieve both clinical as well as commercial success. On the generic side, we touched upon the filings made and how patent expirations will stimulate the GDS segment growth. We have also talked about the lumpiness of our business in general and how the progress should be measured on an annual basis and not on a quarterly basis. And I might add that even at an annual level, the growth is unlikely to be linear. I believe that FY23 merits a few highlights. Number one, a better business mix. CMS business is expanding in line with the company's strategy and objectives. NCEs that are commercial or on the verge of commercialization are fueling this expansion. Number two, despite a decline in contribution from a few prime products like Levetiracetam, GDS growth is healthy, and it's driven by specialty APIs like Apixaban and Paliperidone, which again point to an improvement in the business mix. Number three, Unit 3 utilization has increased, especially in the second half of the year, as seen by the rise in operating leverage. Number four, execution challenges continue to exist, but they're being proactively managed. And finally, number five, in FY23, we have laid foundations to strengthen the organization's structure and support the growth and the vision that we have, which is to be a partner and not just a service provider to our customers. While we have focused on strengthening the team in the past, I believe we are taking a much more comprehensive approach now. Let me now talk about the Q4. Specialty recorded another high growth quarter with revenues crossing 100 crores, and it's being driven, like I said, by Apixaban, Paliperidone, along with products like Ezetimib and Donepezil. We continue to be enthusiastic about the growth of these products and our specialty portfolio. Additionally, during this quarter, we filed for three DMFs, Tafamidis, Voxelotor, and Voxelotor Co-Crystal, which are all part of our long-term plan for the GDS business in line with our strategic priorities. The CMS business this quarter contributed to over 45% of the revenues, being driven by a few molecules which have recently transitioned to commercial, as well as some old molecules. We have also seen significant contribution from molecules under development. We are seeing a lot of traction for new business in CMS as new customers are becoming aware of Newland's capabilities in scaling up products from clinical to commercial. We see this as a vindication of our position as a well-regarded CDMO. I would like to place an additional comment here about the current CDMO business. We have a list of over 85 active projects which we consistently share with our investors. But I'd like to underscore that these projects are all catering purely to innovators working on human health. We are observing a shift towards high-margin business, which has been our stated objective. However, we continue to be mindful of any future negative effects that the business mix, product mix, raw material prices, or forex could have on these margins, and we would like all of you to be cognizant of this. In addition, I want to reiterate that Unit 3 is ramping up effectively and supporting our expansion. some of our late stage CMS projects are being scaled up here, and some of these, and as some of these products scale up, we can see that unit 3 utilization will continue to increase. Despite the fact that this will result in increase in operating costs, we believe the operating leverage will continue to kick in, and we will maintain the momentum we saw in FY23. Even as we have closed FY23 on a high note, we continue to aspire for a healthy growth. With regards to the same, on the manufacturing side, we are focusing on modernizing our operations as well as adding newer capacities and capabilities. This is being done to ensure our leadership position in key molecules as well as open the door to manufacture newer molecules which are in the pipeline. Also on the R&D front, we are consistently investing in our labs as well as deepening and widening our R&D talent pool even as we continue training our cross-functional teams so as to deliver high-value complex projects. Our focus continues to be on our customer needs, and it is central to all the actions that we take as management team. In conclusion, I would like to emphasize that the performance in Q4 doesn't comprise of any one-offs, and that it is a healthy indicator of the direction in which we want to drive the company. However, I would also like to emphasize that the business is inherently fraught with the challenges that we have talked about over the years, and this is something that could potentially have impact as we go forward. So I will pause here and open it up for Q&A.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask a question, please press star one now. We'll take our first question from the line of Sajal Kapoor, an investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, and thanks for taking my question, and congratulations on awesome results, excellent execution. A few questions. Number one, culture and chemistry go hand in hand. So how has the culture been transformed in recent years as NCE scale-up is a very different game compared to generics? What concrete steps have been taken regarding the culture side of things? That's one. And we know how the CDMO pipeline has progressed over the years, but can you paint a qualitative picture of your journey over the years? Things like the level of complexity you guys were handling 10 to 12 years back versus today, the kind of innovators that were willing to partner with Newland back then versus today, and similar attributes if possible, keeping the molecule and the client confidentiality intact. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Sajal. I think the first question is about culture and chemistry and how do they go hand in hand with regards to execution. I think for us, as I had mentioned in the opening remarks, being a service provider helps us stay focused on the needs of the customer. There are no challenges such as conflict of interest, we developing a molecule that potentially is competing with our customer's molecule, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the business model itself is inherently set up in a positive way. However, having said that, I think for us, the challenge that we face, and I will ask Suchet to explain that, the challenge that we face is that we work in predominantly a culture in the industry where people are, you know, used to working in a product environment. They are actually focusing on what they have to, people within specific departments have to do. That's a challenge we've had to address, and we've had to kind of, you know, transform and create our own culture where there's a need for cross-functional teams. And that's something that we have strived very hard to work on. Maybe Suchet, if you want to just elaborate on that, then we'll answer the second question.
Sure. No, thanks, Harsh. I think second question first, Sajal, in the sense if we had to reflect in this room, we've always maintained in our past investor calls that Abhijit was referring to, that we've always had a strategy of an organization that wanted to focus on complex APIs. That kind of explains why we developed these specialty APIs, our focus on contract manufacturing, our development of peptides, and that's the strategy we set out to achieve. Obviously, it's been a long time coming, but we've been consistently on it, and we've completely shared that strategy as well. And that's what, as Harsh referred to in his opening comments, that's what we're seeing playing out, and it will in the future as well. Now, just adding to what Harsh said on the culture side, you know, I would say it's been a continuous evolution. One thing I would say we've done is, referring to Harsh's comment about projects and the CMS business, we've brought the customer to the center of focus over the last couple of years, where how we are impacting the customer, how our products are impacting the customer, how our projects are impacting the customer has been bang in the center of all our discussions and all our processes within the organization, whether it's project management, communication, how we plan, how we execute. That's become a major factor in our decision making. The only other thing I would add is that you know, our CHRO, our top leadership of the team, they've been spending a lot of time in building a culture of strong cross-functional teams that are able to make decisions, investing in their capabilities, and bringing focus to the customer. So Harsh and I could go on, but I think this would suffice.
Yeah. I think with regards to the second question, I know Suchet has answered it, but I also, if you could just repeat, you also wanted to understand how the demographic of the customer has changed on the CDMO business. Is that the question?
Yeah, so we have been on this journey, as far as I remember, somewhere around 2009 or 2010 when the new R&D center was set up. So just wanted a qualitative color on, you know, the level of complexity that you guys were handling in the initial years with no sort of track record, versus the level of complexity, maybe late stage molecules that you guys are getting now, or any other qualitative attributes. I'm not interested in, you know, what molecules or client name, etc., because you already shared the molecules in the pipeline, which I must say no other player in the industry is sharing in India, including some of the bigger players like Syngene for that matter. But I just wanted a qualitative assessment over the years.
Yeah, so I think when we started off in the CDMO business, I think, you know, I think a lot of the work was trying to just, you know, find some opportunities of partnering with innovators, because we were not a household name for innovators. So the projects were more smaller in nature. They were like making building blocks, simple chemistry, something that would kind of at least create a certain level of basic trust. I think as the journey progressed, I think the first 5-7 years was a lot about just doing, you know, intermediates, trying to, you know, we spent a lot of time and effort trying to work with big pharma. We were never successful in on that front. We parallelly were exploring opportunities with biotechs, and even there, you know, started off with early stage, simpler projects. Then I think over the next 5 years, starting from FY13 onwards, we kind of, you know, were able to get some early breaks. We were able to, you know, work on opportunities involving NCE APIs. I think, you know, maybe we were also not very fortunate at that time, because some of the molecules at that time were also potential blockbusters, but they really didn't take off. But we at least started working on NCE APIs, you know, maybe about 8-10 years ago, starting from FY13-14. And I think over the few years after that, we've transitioned into a much larger pipeline of CMS molecules, and a larger pipeline statistically gives you more opportunities for success. So I think, yes, the journey is maybe almost 15-20 years old. I think we've been in this space, but I think for us, the critical mass of projects with biotech companies has actually resulted in more opportunities in late stage clinical and commercial, And I think today there is a healthy basket in front of us. And I think as you indicated, we cannot disclose names and such, but this is broadly how the journey has been.
No, that's helpful. And could...
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Kapoor. Please come back in the question queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Aditya Khemka from InCred Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Couple of questions from my side as well. Let's start with the CMS business, both development and commercial arms of the business. So if I look at your quarterly numbers, in the fourth quarter, there seems to be a fourfold jump in the development revenue and a 30% jump in the commercial revenues. Could you just talk to us about, you know, what has driven this and, you know, how sticky or how consistently would you be able to grow the business from here on? Is the fourth quarter run rate something which you feel is sustainable, or is this something which we should look on a full year basis rather than looking on a fourth quarter and going forward basis?
Yeah, so I think Aditya, definitely the last point you mentioned, I think you should look at it on an annualized basis and not on a quarterly basis, because as you also know, it's a fairly lumpy business. And, you know, I think what might happen in one quarter is not necessarily going to repeat. But on an annualized basis, I think it's fair to surmise that this is a reasonable number. I think the development revenues are also going up because see, we categorize commercial as molecules which are commercially approved by the FDA or the regulatory agency. And those are categorized as commercial. Anything that is not yet commercial is part of development. But the development revenues are also higher because molecules which are on the verge of commercialization, you know, I think they have the same size and revenue potential, et cetera, as commercial molecules, but categorization wise, we categorize them as development, and that's why the development side is looking large. So I think that's kind of what I would say to your question.
No, I'm sorry, I have a cross question here. Your development pipeline on 4Q22 had 15 molecules, 8 APIs, 8 intermediates, 16 molecules, 8 API, 8 intermediates. Your development pipeline as 4Q23 had 15, one less on the intermediate side, so 8 API, 7 intermediate. So clearly, you know, despite the number of molecules not, in fact, decreasing from 4Q to 4Q last year versus this year, your revenues have grown manifold, you know, compared to 4Q22 and 4Q23. So my question was specific to, you know, is it certain projects which are driving it, or is it just a couple of projects driving it? Or is it like a broad-based sort of improvement in the volumes of the business?
It's very specific projects. It's not a broad-based number. It's one or two molecules in that column that are actually driving the revenue up.
Understood.
Yeah, Sajeev, you want to add?
Yeah, and Aditya, too, just to clarify, even though what you say we are labeling, means I think the two tables which are there on the same slide are, they are slightly different reflections, because the development revenues that we are talking about is revenue from all the products which are not commercial. So even revenues from, say, a product in phase 3 or phase even preclinical are also counted there. So I think we just need to make that distinction. So even as you talked about the number of projects in development, you have to consider all the projects together when it comes to the development revenue.
I get
everything
that. Okay,
that's not helpful. Commercial is classified as development.
Yeah,
understood. So that makes sense. Thank you very much. My second question.
But it's a good point. I think we'll tweak the nomenclature, because I think there's a valid point of confusion there.
Yeah, thank you. That would be helpful for investors in future as well. My second question was really on the patent situation regarding paltaridone maleate in the European market. Could you talk to us about what the patent situation currently there is?
So I think, Aditya, in terms of the patent situation for paliperidone, I think even as the product patent had expired in the past, I think the innovator continues to be fighting on the various patent fronts. So as for our customers, they believe that the patent has expired and they should be able to launch the product soon in Europe and a few other markets.
So that is slightly confusing to me. If the patent has expired, how come the innovator is still fighting on it? Generally, the fighting happens when the patent is still not expired and you're fighting on the validity of the patent. That I understand. But if it's already expired, then the innovator really has no case in the court, right?
I think maybe, Aditya, part of the, I think it's the, see, again, as the API maker, we are probably not the best to comment on the legitimacy of the generics to enter. I think from a demand perspective, I think the visibility is there. But I think whether why the innovator is not challenging is something that maybe we may not be the best to answer. Sujit, you want to say something?
No, I think it's a legitimate confusion. As you know, all of Europe does not have the exact same patent landscape. So the SPCs are expiring at different times in different countries. So what our customers have done is that they filed across multiple countries in Europe. Where there is no challenge is where they expect to launch the product and have already bought those launch quantities from us. But as we know, the innovator will continue to fight each and every possible battle to keep the generics off the market, and therefore those are the conversations that we're continuing to have with our customers. So we discuss our patents, where we feel strong about it, where can we launch, where can we not launch, but our customer has the best visibility, and as API supplier, we only have limited visibility to what's going on.
That's helpful. Just one more question.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Khemka, kindly join back the question queue. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in the interest of time and fairness to all participants, please restrict questions to two per participant. If you still have more questions, please join the queue afresh. Take the next question from the line of Anirudh Shetty from Solidarity Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my question. And it's just more around the CDMO business of ours. You know, why do
Sir, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Shetty. Please use the handset. Your audio is not very clear. Thank you.
Is this better?
No, please use the handset, sir, if possible.
Okay, I'm actually on handset mode. If it's still not clear, maybe I'll join back in the queue.
Yeah, please go ahead, sir. We can hear you now better.
Thank you. Perfect. So my question, I had a few questions on our CDMO business. You know, we have a non-compete approach, which, you know, I am, you know, aligned with. I understand the rationale behind that. But so my question is, I see a few competitors of ours that do not have a non-compete approach. They are in formulation, but at the same time, you know, are growing quite well. So just want to understand, is this something basis our discussions with our customer? Is something that, you know, is a competitive edge for us, helps us stand out, or could this be a restriction of some sorts which, you know, does not improve our positioning in CDMO? So just wanted more clarity around that.
The model is, I think there's no enforcement from the customer, but I think what we've seen in our experience when we are working on a molecule for the CDMO business, it's very challenging for us to work on the same molecule for the generic business because there's a lot of technical, there's a lot of IP involved which could potentially, you know, belong to the innovator. A lot of times, you know, innovators are explicitly clear about it. They have contracts with us which prohibit us from working on the generic. But in many cases, they also don't have such contracts, but we elect not to place those molecules in the generic list because there would always be certain analytical methods, there would be certain procedures that we may have learned from the innovator, and we do not wish to expose those to their competitors, which is the generic. So you could say that it's partly strategic, it's partly, you know, our intention of keeping our business model very straight, and also it's partly driven by the fact that we believe we can grow this business without necessarily making the generic version of the NCE as well.
Got it. Fair enough. The CDMO business would be about, I think, 440, 450 crores, this year. How does one think about the margin profile of CDMO? Do you believe that the current margins here that we're making are, kind of peak, or as we scale up from here onwards, there is scope for better margins just for, a CDMO business?
Yeah, I think the margin profiles are really a factor of the product mix of the CMS business. There are products which have 80% gross margins. There are products which have only 35-40% gross margins. And all these molecules are NCEs, and these are all molecules under patent for innovator companies. So the concept or the molecule itself is still attractive to Newland. But what it presents to us as a business in aggregate is factor of how these molecules do. So I think it will be hard for us to guide or indicate that what is this gross margin. I think it is what it is right now. We believe that as we are growing this business, we will see molecules which have very high gross margins. We may also see molecules which have slightly lower. And as we had indicated in our earlier commentary also, sometimes when we get on board as a source for an innovator, as a second source, the margins are scrutinized a little bit more because there's a reference point of the first source. So it's hard to become a second source for an NCE API and expect to get 80% gross margins. Maybe if the drug is an orphan drug, maybe there is no pricing pressure for the innovator. Maybe if we have been with the molecule from phase one, then maybe you have headroom for a higher margin. But that's the color we can provide to you. Unfortunately, we can't really answer the question more specifically.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Sachin Jain, an investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Sujit, many congratulations on wonderful results. I have a couple of questions. One on, as you are right now building the organization and probably your aspiration is to build a scalable organization, what are some of key pillars you intend to build from here, particularly people, hiring, culture, mindset change? Indeed, you spoke about some of the one cultural aspect about customer-centric. Now, entire organization is galvanized towards customers. So what are some of the interventions you are doing for the scalability? That's number one. And number two, can you also talk a bit about how do you see capital allocation going forward in the next couple of years, particularly what kind of new capacities or CapEx plan you guys have?
A couple of things, Sachin. One, I think in terms of building capabilities, currently the primary focus of all the leadership of the organization is to build that depth in terms of the talent that we have in the organization. So there's a lot of focus on what are the key positions in the organization, what are the key projects, who are the key people, how do we invest in them? How do we unlock their potential? Who else do we need to hire? I think that, I would say, is our largest focus right now. Apart from that, we have our future plans. We've projected our business in terms of how it could perform. So therefore, we're constantly looking at what could be the possible obstacles for it. What are the interventions which are required? We've significantly strengthened our enterprise risk management program to anticipate what are the macro risks, what are the risks that could impact us, what are the risks we need to be aware of, who are the directly responsible people or the teams responsible for mitigating those risks. That's a big focus area, apart from ESG that we've spoken even in the last call. Because at the end of the day, all this doesn't mean anything if you're not able to build a sustainable organization. Therefore, our focus on having those environmental controls, targets, our social governance, the overall governance in terms of our board, all of that. So I would say these are probably the top three or four pillars, apart from the culture that we've talked about in the previous question by one of the participants. I think notwithstanding that, broadly in terms of the capital layout, I think majority of the capital is going to go into the kind of technology. As you know, we've talked about it, Harsh, I, in the previous calls, we mentioned it in our annual report, are our top six strategic priorities, which talk about what R&D capabilities we want to add, how do we want to build our manufacturing capabilities in terms of buffer capacity, alternate production lines, our project management strategy, our digitization strategy, our people strategy, and finally the kind of products that we want to develop in the generic space. So we have a set of six clear strategic priorities. A lot of our decision making in terms of what we want to do, what we don't want to do, is dictated by these strategic priorities. Similarly, that's going to dictate where we allocate our capital as well in terms of the technologies we want to invest in, the R&D infrastructure, as well as the manufacturing infrastructure, both in terms of capacity as well as technical capabilities. So this is broadly what I can tell you in terms of what the top team of this organization is focusing on as far as the future is concerned. Thanks.
What's going to be intensity of new CapEx, Sujit, if I have to see next couple of years?
I'm sorry, Sachin, what was that?
What's going to be intensity of new CapEx? Are you going to be more aggressive now, as you are saying, maybe more engagement with new clients, and maybe and probably your current capacity can take you how long in terms of revenue?
No, Sachin, I think our CapEx is very business driven. So, we've set certain policies internally in terms of how we want to deploy our CapEx in terms of the percentage of the overall operating cash flow, in terms of the kind of debt equity ratios that we want to maintain, the credit rating we want to maintain. So the CapEx that we deploy is business driven, also based on internal policies of how we want to develop and grow the business.
I think maybe I'll just add a comment on top of what Chet said. I think as our endeavor also has been to improve the quality of our business to the point that we are able to partner with customers. That means CapEx that would get created would be backed by partnerships. We're not necessarily saying that customers would fund the CapEx, but at least we would have enough business visibility, we would have enough conviction, so that some of the challenges that Newland had faced in the past of creating assets and then perhaps, you know, having to wait for an extended period of time, we are now in a better off position to avoid that. And so that's kind of what will be the endeavor. And I think faster growth would probably result in CapEx being deployed sooner. If the growth takes a little bit more time, then I guess we'll have a little bit more headroom for CapEx deployment.
Right now, you're at what percentage capital utilization?
Currently, you know, as you're aware, we have three plants. The first two plants are closer to 80-90%, and unit three is at around 64%. For FY23, and we expect it to be at that same level in FY24. So we have a headroom to grow to fund our growth or fuel our growth or meet our growth through Unit 3 for a couple of years.
The only caveat I would add, Sachin, to what Abhijit said is that capacity utilization is always a tricky question. The reason being is that it changes as the product mix changes, and we're constantly debottlenecking.
Yes.
In the existing units, and every time you do that, the capacity utilization or the available capacity inches up. So I think what Abhijit said are very fair as far as the current situation is concerned, but that could change based on the business mix.
And I'll kind of add also, we have the ability to kind of create more manufacturing blocks there, and that is to what Sahash alluded to, that we want to be very sure that as we are investing, we kind of tying it to some part of customer commitments in some form, so sure, that we kind of are able to convert capital into revenue. Yeah.
Thanks. All the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, kindly take, in the interest of time, please restrict questions to two per participant. We take our next question from the line of Sanjay Satapathy from Ampersand. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, so my question is that in the opening remark, you attributed the sudden surge in your quarter four revenue to commercialization of some new molecule. Am I correct here?
Hello? We did not say commercialization of a new molecule. So I think what we had attributed to the growth to was the growth in the CMS business. And that growth is attributable to the advancement of commercialization or advancement of the clinical molecule. So I think it's a combination. So we were not very specific on that. But please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, the reason why I'm asking is that the details that you have given about how many molecules you have in commercial state in API as well as intermediate, it is staying at 9 and 12 respectively for last three quarters. So I was trying to understand that what really happened. I'm not being able to understand, relate the numbers.
Yeah, I think so, Sanjay. The way our the way we present our table is we present what are the molecules that have contributed or active at this point of time. So the table actually tells you how many molecules are active in Neuland's portfolio for you to be able to see progress over a period of time. What we have said or what is, you know, contributing to the revenue, if you're not correlating that with the table, it just means that it's not like there's a new molecule that has entered that has given us the revenue, but a molecule that has already been in the table is contributing to the revenue, which is very likely to happen. So when a molecule is in phase two and moving into phase three, or a molecule is in phase three, it's getting into commercialization, the table itself may not change, but as we are shipping out product for that particular quarter, the revenue number will be there. So the table is more to give you a high level, long term health of what's happening on the CMS side. The revenue split or the revenue itself, coupled with the commentary, is meant to give you an idea of what's kind of contributing to the quarter, but it will be difficult to, you know, connect both for every quarter.
Understood. If in that context, can I ask that between the split of CMS revenue between commercial and development, I would assume that development would be a lot more lumpy and unpredictable compared to commercial. Is that the correct assumption?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, because your commercial is the one which has seen the maximum increase. So to that extent, we're trying to see sustainability of Q4 number.
Yeah, see, I think commercialization is happening, Sanjay. I think I'll also just kind of add another point here. See, commercialization of molecules are happening, and that commercialization is recorded as commercial revenue, and that revenue on an annual level is fairly stable. At a quarterly level, even commercial molecules can have lumpiness, because some of the lower volume CMS molecules that we do, we don't necessarily ship out material every quarter. We ship out maybe twice a year, three times a year, or maybe sometimes once a year. So again, you know, I think Q4 by itself for CMS is not a representation of the CMS business as a base. But if you look at the overall CMS business of FY23, it's a good legitimate base for the business.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Keshav from Raxin Investors. Please go ahead.
Hi, congrats for a great quarter, sir. So firstly, I understand lumpiness is part of a model. For other CDMOs, we've at times seen multi-year lumpiness even for decently sized molecules. So the innovators might end up stocking for longer than a year. And there's some variation between big and small innovators as well. So when we reiterate better commercial sales on an overall basis from an annual standpoint, is there an element of the innovator's conviction on us as a CDMO that we will be able to deliver in time and therefore the sales can be better spread out? Or it's largely depending on their broad activity of sourcing?
I think it's a factor of the stage of the drug in its life cycle. I think at least that's what we've seen in our limited experience. When a drug is newly commercialized or on the verge of commercialization, there's a lot more lumpiness because the customers also don't know, the innovator doesn't know how the drug will do. They'll order a lot of launch quantities, then they'll sit on a lot of inventory. If the drug, God forbid, doesn't do well, then we don't even see that business for a year, 2 years, 3 years. There's been cases where we never saw the business again after we made launch quantities. But what happens once after 2-3 years after launch, the innovator starts getting a better sense of how the volumes are moving, how much inventory they need to hold, etc. And then things start settling down and then you start seeing business in a more even clip. The only exception to this point is sometimes when they're low volume products and the customer is getting them made in one or two campaigns at the formulator side, they might order the API in campaigns as well. But other than that, usually it's more of a factor of the innovator understanding their supply chain needs and less of their trust or mistrust in our ability to make API.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please restrict questions to one per participant. We take our next question from the line of Meet Haresh Bhai Katrodia from Nivesh I. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm audible.
Yes, you are. Please go ahead.
Sir, yes, sir. We see good improvement in revenue from development and commercial phase molecule. So, in QOQ. So, will this sustainable in future also?
Could you just repeat the question, please? Sorry,
we didn't get it. Yes, yes. We see good improvement in revenue from development and commercial phase molecules, right? QOQ. So, will this sustainable? Is this sustainable?
I think as Harsh was saying earlier, there was reference that there will be a quarter-on-quarter lumpiness. In fact, one of the earlier investors also mentioned that they've seen this kind of business even show a year-to-year lumpiness. The way I would answer your question is that the business, the way it is today, it's sustainable because it's based on a strong foundation and a solid base of molecules as well as customers. Now, how that will reflect on a quarter-on-quarter on year-to-year, it is very difficult for us to predict. Thanks.
Thank you. Take our next question from the line of Aditya Khemka from InCred Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the follow-up. Just one follow-up on paliperidone palmitate again. We know that it's a product that needs to be sterilized, and if I'm not mistaken, we have outsourced the sterilization to a third party. My question to you is, when it comes to sharing, that part of the revenue with the third party for sterilization, what is the bargaining power of the third party versus us? I mean, if tomorrow they wanted more of the pie, how easy or how difficult would it be for us to switch the sterilizer for us?
No, I think, the bargaining power and the agreements that we have with the third party are confidential to the organization. All we can tell you at this point is that whatever third parties we work with, including paliperidone and several other molecules that we work with third parties, we have a pretty good relationship and agreements in place, and we continue to manage them.
Thank you.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Sajal Kapoor, an investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks again. Question on our cash flows. What really needs to happen to make these cash flows sustainable and growing over the next couple of years, so this year and next year? When I analyze the cash flow statement, I see that we have a receivable of about 134 crores. So we are negatively impacted because of the receivables. and yet we have a significantly higher operating cash adjusting for working capital at around 238 crores. And part of the benefit or the positive impact is also coming from the advances that we get from the innovators. So I see a large payable there, around 56 crores as well. So how can we see the cash flow movement over the next year, so this year and next year, and what does it mean for our capital allocation strategy going forward? Thank you.
So I'll kind of answer the first question, is that on when you see the cash flow of FY23, you're absolutely right. We generated free cash flow, which was very good, 172. And we did get a lot of advances, and it's 135 crores at the end of March. Our estimate is that this is something which is exceptional and kind of will even out in FY24, and that's how we have planned it. To your second question on capital allocation, I think so Suchet has already explained it, that we will be very mindful of trying to convert our capex into cash as quickly as possible, back it up with orders. Our priority will obviously be around investing in R&D, enhancing capability there, and in manufacturing to service our growth. So we'll be very mindful of that, and mindful of having some expectations around our key matrices that we have already alluded to in a previous earnings call.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Jay Shah, an investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my question. With regards to the capital allocation, I think an earlier participant on the call touched upon the high amount of cash we're generating. I just wanted to know if we would intend to do an overseas acquisition in a regulated market, say perhaps in the next 3 to 5 years, particularly if it could open up opportunities for us to partner with new biotech companies which are quite stringent in the requirements and focus on specific therapeutic areas by leveraging human resource capabilities in the overseas market. Also, during a call about a year and a half ago, it was mentioned that we expect around half a dozen molecules to reach the commercializing stage, with a couple of them having the potential to become blockbusters. I'm curious if any of the molecules that have already gone into commercialization or expect to do so in the next 1 or 2 years have the potential to become blockbusters. Thank you.
Thanks for the questions. I think with regards to overseas acquisition, I think it's a logical question. I think for Newland right now, we have a fairly exciting business plan in front of us, which is built out for another 6-7 years. I think our plan is to execute on that and be also open to what other possibilities are there. I think this is a current view. It might change in the future, but we don't necessarily look at capacity augmentation as a need for overseas acquisitions. I think the only reason why we would look at an overseas is if there's a capability acquisition, which sometimes you can't do because you don't have certain capabilities in India because the scientists or those labs, etc., are not there. But I don't think Newland would look at building a plant or acquiring a plant overseas so that we can attract business overseas. It doesn't make sense to us. I think with regards to the second question, I forgot, what was the second question?
About the molecules which have gone commercial, whether they're potential to blockbuster.
Yeah, so I think what we had said and is that we have, I think a year and a half, what you're referring to, we had said that, we have a pipeline of molecules, of which 5 to 6 molecules are, likely to get commercialized over the next few years. I think that was absolutely true. I think two of them, since that comment, have become commercial. I think that would be reflected in the table as well. So 2 molecules, since that comment, have been commercial. One is likely to be commercial next year. Actually, 2 are likely to be commercial next year. As of now, thankfully, nothing has dropped out from that list, but I think it's reasonable to expect that at least 1 or 2 might drop out. So I think we're fairly We stand by that comment, and I think it's something that is likely to drive the growth of CMS.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Darshil Javeri from Crown Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, sir, and thank you so much for taking my question. So, sir, I understand there could be lumpiness in the business, and that could that better reflected on our year-on-year revenue. But so, how could we see our next 2 or 3 years revenue, you know, growth? Because we had a flat year in FY22, but we had good growth in FY23. So, something from a bit maybe longer-term perspective that could account for the lumpiness, something that could help us in terms of our revenue and margins, what could be our sustainable, and that would be very helpful, sir.
I think completely understand your question, but I think everything we've said in the call today is all we can say in response to the question that you asked. You know, I think the business has been lumpy. I think growth, even at an annualized level, sometimes as we've seen from FY21 to 22, is not linear. I think what is also important, which we said in the opening part of the call, is that the number of molecules in the pipeline, both for GDS and CMS, are continuously increasing. The potential of these molecules are also fairly high. This is evident in the performance of the recent few quarters. I think this is something that is sustainable. They're not one-offs. I think given these points that have been said, I think it's reasonable to assume that going forward, we will have, you know, I think we will have a very good trajectory for growth. But, you know, obviously, as an investor, you're asking specific questions like what will be the growth rate or what will be the margin. I think these are things that are difficult for us to answer because it's really a factor of the business mix, the product mix, and those are subject to how individual molecules are going to do. So, I think, yes, I think things are looking optimistic for us. But yes, I think lumpiness is there, but I think what we've seen in the past, what's going to be different about the future is that the base of the business has increased now. I think for several years we struggled at a 500 crore level, then we went to, like, you know, 600, 650, then we struggled at 950 for a year or two, or we struggled for a year, and now we have started to show a breakaway from that. So I think we can talk more retrospectively, but we cannot talk that much more prospectively. I think, you know, as you watch, I think in the time to come, you will get better confidence on how this growth will pan out.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Raghu from Aura. Please go ahead. Mr. Raghu, your line is unmuted. Please go and ask your question.
Yes, sir. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Sir, in spite of such a good result, the dividend is just 10%. Dividend is just 10%. Can you highlight what will be the dividend payout ratios going forward?
I think just to clarify, if you look at the history of the dividend payout, the highest we have done is about 5 rupees per equity share. So for this year, we've actually doubled that. So we've gone from 5 rupees to 10 rupees per equity share. And that's the highest the company has paid in terms of the total payout as far as the dividend is concerned. So I think the dividend payout, the decision that the board and the management have taken, it's keeping in mind that we've had a good year, and it's important that the shareholders also see the benefit of that. And I think the dividend payout actually reflects that.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I'd now like to hand the conference back over to the management for closing comments. Over to you, gentlemen.
Thank you, everyone, once again for joining us on this call. We really appreciate the enthusiasm shown for our business, and even as was reiterated through the call, that the momentum that we see for the future, we are optimistic about it. And On that note, I'd just like to thank everyone once again. We'll see you soon again. Bye.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Newland Laboratories, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining with us. You may now disconnect your lines.